Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The Brian Lehrer Show is not live today, so we won't be taking any calls. But we thought we'd take this opportunity to bring you some of our favorite recent segments. So enjoy, and remember that our comments page is always open. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Happy birthday, America. And happy birthday, C-SPAN. 33 years ago, the United States got its first televised congressional hearing when C-SPAN went on the air. Now, there are three C-SPAN channels showing the House, the Senate, and other public affairs events, plus C-SPAN radio, an online presence, of course, and more. So has C-SPAN been good for democracy? Now is a good time to ask, because of the announced partial retirement of C-SPAN's founder and CEO and often lead face, Brian Lamb. Brian, thank you so much for coming back on WNYC.
How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Please call me Brian. The LA Times article on your retirement is headlined, C-SPAN's Brian Lamb, Master of Bipartisanship, Stepping Down. Do you like that label?
How about nonpartisanship? Anything but partisanship I like, yes.
Why did you start C-SPAN?
Well, actually, my first interest in doing what I'm doing came from the fact that we were just not getting much information on television. We had three commercial big networks that sit up there in your city, and if you wanted to get on television, you wanted to get your point of view out, you had to go to them, and you know the world's been turned upside down in the last 35 years, and we're just one little small part of it.
Were there certain things happening in the country in the late 70s that especially inspired you to launch a network like this?
I think probably the biggest inspiration for me came from my 4 years in the Navy during the Vietnam War. And I saw up close, I was in the Pentagon for the last 2 years, and I saw up close that on one side the government was lying, and on the other side the television networks clamor for exclusivity and all that stuff, and their reporting led to some pretty strange reports. And I just kept saying to myself, the public just doesn't get to see as much as going on here. And, you know, with including your show, the whole thing is different today, and everybody has so much information. Now they're complaining.
Do you remember a particular media report about Vietnam that really offended you or that you thought was really weird?
I was offended from inside when I found out that the Pentagon was lying. I was there helping them lie as a member of the Navy, and I don't wear this as a chip on my shoulder, but I couldn't believe how many things were manipulated, the numbers in particular. And this one thing that I remember, and I'm not even so sure that exactly when it happened, but one day they put out a press release and said, whoops, we've been telling you 5,000 airplanes have been shot down, and we really mean 10,000 because we weren't including 5,000 of them that we were able to save a considerable number of their parts. It was stuff like that, or the manipulation of numbers on MIAs and killed in action, and I had to read those every Thursday. Mm-hmm. And the manipulation of the other side's numbers to make it all sound like we were winning. And then when McNamara admitted years later that he knew we couldn't win and went ahead and kept telling the public that we could, that had a very strong impression. On the other side of that, not to ramble on, but I watched an ABC News reporter. I liked him very much, but I couldn't believe what happened one day when a bunch of demonstrators came in, and they were very passive until the cameras came, and they all stood up and started acting like they were rallying in front of the war room and the Pentagon, and what you saw on the news that night wasn't accurate as to what really happened.
That's really interesting history. Brian Lamb, my guest on WNYC, founder and CEO of C-SPAN, getting ready now to go into semi-retirement after 33 years. So as the master of nonpartisanship, before C-SPAN, I gather, you had worked in Republican politics. And from my several conversations with you, I get the impression of you as a man who actually has strong opinions about things. Do you ever miss fighting for a point of view you believe in?
No, and I must go back to say a couple things, because as it's evolved, I reflect on my early years. I spent 2 years in the Johnson White House as a Navy aide, and then I came out and spent time later in I was never in Republican politics, except I worked in the Nixon campaign in a not very important job in 68 in the Citizens Group, which was a it was run by a Democrat, and I've just never been a member of a party. Mm-hmm. And my strongest views on anything have to do with not what we spend our money on, but how we spend it, and the fact we spend money we don't have. The rest of it I've long since given up as being something that I'm not going to get into, I'm not interested in, and mm-hmm. I don't wear my feelings on the sleeve.
Okay. Do you think C-SPAN has been an unqualified good thing for democracy, or also brought some unintended bad?
I think you always bring sides to a project like this that people can easily point to and say, well, that, you know, that's a negative. I mean, once you put a television camera in front of anything, it changes the atmosphere, and it doesn't mean it changes it for the bad or the good. It just changes it. People are conscious of the fact they're talking to somebody far away from wherever the event is located. But I haven't thought much about it, and I really don't care, because my attitude on this after all these years of doing this is the public ought to be able to see public events.
Recently on our show, we had Time Magazine Washington correspondent Jay Newton Small on how politicians use the media, and she surprised many people when she said C-SPAN, in her opinion, is a major cause of our worsening gridlock and polarization. Here's a little piece of that.
As much as I love C-SPAN, and I think it's great that we have that transparency, it has had the sort of unintentional effect of taking all real debate off of the floors of the House and Senate, or even in the committees, because the minute a member shows a vulnerability of a position, or, you know, and it's caught on camera, that becomes a campaign commercial. That becomes something that gets hammered for the other side. And so you can't really ever give your true opinion because you're always on camera.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't agree with it. I'm not. I can see her point of view, and I suspect that we have had that impact on a debate or two. I'm a little older than she is, and I used to sit up in the gallery of the House of Representatives and sit in the hearing rooms. I don't think things have changed that much. It used to be, and I think this is the significance of having us around, that the networks would come in, light the room mainly to see the majority side of the committee, see a confrontation, they hope, between the leadoff witness and the chairman, and then that soundbite would end up on the evening news. Now we're there for the entire event. We show the fact that a lot of members don't even show up for these hearings. We show the fact that at times the hearings are empty. You know, I think people are fairly casual about the fact that we're around now, and the change may be from an individual to individual, but you can't say on a blanket basis that everything has gotten worse because television's there.
To go one layer deeper into the point she was trying to make, a lot of it was that members of Congress are now more reluctant to express any nuance on the floor of the House, which drives all the real debate and deal-making further into the back rooms. Because if they don't come out with just the sheer partisan red meat point of view, it's going to hurt their reelectability. Do you agree with that at all?
I don't think so. I tell you why. I mean, what they say in the chamber used to be manipulated in the sense that they could change whatever they say, and unless there was a reporter in the chamber to you know, catalog exactly what their words were, they could be. Because I used to be an aide there, and I'd go in and change the senator's comments, so he made more sense and better syntax and all that kind of stuff. We may not be there yet, but it seems to me that this town has gotten away with a lot of what it's gotten away with because the public couldn't pay that close attention. And I don't care if we have bumps in the road here. We're broke here. I mean, we're $15 trillion in debt. How did we get there? And it's just crept up on us because a lot of the things that go on here don't get any attention.
Brian Lamb, CEO and founder of C-SPAN, going into semi-retirement after 33 years. Jim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Brian Lamb. Hello.
Hey, Brian. I've called in on your show many times. I really miss you once you left the Daily Washington Journal show. You do a wonderful job. Two things I think about the show that I like, especially with the Washington Journal. You can get such a great cross-section of people in this country and their points of view from just those viewers that call in. Of course, some of them are a little nutty, but, I mean, that's America. And the only other thing that I'm curious about is I know you have, like, people from the Heritage Foundation and other institutions on there a lot. Is it they come on so much because there's no other competition? Is that the reason why you have the Heritage and the other people like that on so much, even though I realize they represent the right?
No, they're on no more than anybody from Brookings or from the Institute of Policy Studies or from the Center for American Progress. And we are all over the lot with this. If you don't like what Heritage does, then you tend to see them more than you do when you have somebody on that people like.
But, Jim, was your question why they have Heritage or conservative think tanks on so much or why they go to think tanks in general so much?
Well, it's more of the fact is I guess the problem is there are not enough diverse think tanks out there. It seems to me that even Brian, you're right on both the on both the sides. You're great about that. But why aren't there any new think tanks? To tell you the truth, that's more my point of view.
Well, good question. But I think one of the newest is one of the strongest in town, and it was created by the Clinton folks called Center for American Progress. It's huge. It's well funded. It's very visible. They have an awful lot of the people that were high in the Clinton administration in the group. We have them on all the time. I think there used to be only, center-left foundations and think tanks in town. And then the Heritage Foundation came in, and they started – there were some new ones. Cato is one that's all over the lot, both on the right and the left. They're mostly anti-war, but they're, you know, very conservative when it comes to money. And then you just have a lot more websites. There's so much information there that we don't have any trouble getting all sides. The biggest problem we have now is getting members of Congress and the Senate. A lot of them won't come on because they don't want to take calls.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Brian Lamb, founder of C-SPAN, semi-retiring after 23 years. You know, I get your mail sometimes. Dear Brian Lamb, I love you on C-SPAN. Glad to hear you have a radio show.
Get it this, the other way too, bro. I don't think that but you wouldn't believe what I tell people when they write me thinking that it's you. I really have tried to disparage you as much as I could.
yeah, me too. Ed in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Joe. And Brian, thanks for all the great work that you've done with C-SPAN over the years. You mentioned a moment ago, you know, we're broke as a country and how did we get here? And it seems to me that this is an issue that's on a lot of people's minds and that many Americans, arguably the majority of Americans, believe that the system is a joke and that the two corporate pragmatic political parties are the reason why. You know, such a huge portion of our eligible voters choose not to vote. And that among those who do vote, or register, more people identify as independents rather than Democrats or Republicans. So I just wanted to get your thoughts in that context to the baseline C-SPAN setup. Namely, you have the Democrat line, the Republican line, and the independent line. It seems like independents are actually the majority of people, and we might want to get a little more nuanced in terms of identifying independents.
Well, actually, every poll I've seen doesn't quite track what you're saying. We just did a poll, as a matter of fact, that we put out last Friday on the Supreme Court thing, and what we found on there was that it's pretty evenly split. I think one of the things that we have noticed here since Fox News started in the middle of the 90s is that we have fewer conservatives watching than we did before that, because a lot of them went to that point of view and stayed there. And then there's so much more available today that people can go to where only their point of view is and stay there. And I think I think a lot of people are dismayed about that. I'm not particularly dismayed about it, but I am aware of it. And I'm not sure I answered your question.
How well do you think the Democratic and Republican and independent dedicated phone lines have worked?
Well, I don't like it, but what happened was we take them as they come, Brian. We don't screen them. I mean, we don't, if we sense that somebody's nutty, or they're, I mean, really nutty, and or drunk or something like that. We won't put them on, but we just take them in order. Then we go back and forth. We started this back when Bill Clinton was president, and it was because we had one side slamming him and trying to basically jam the lines, and then when Reagan came in, it was the other. It was the other side of that. Well, actually, he was in before that. But, I mean, actually, we may have split those during Reagan. I don't remember. But the main thing was that we had too many on one side. I don't like it because it's not spontaneous, and people complain to us about it. But it's worked about as well as we can do something like that. And, you know, a lot of people just don't care. They don't have to. But that we just chose to try that because of getting a program with 40 to out of 60 calls being on one side.
Do you think people try to game it, in your experience, very much, that is, calling in as one or the other in order to try to lend more credence to their point of view?
Sure. Yep. Everything you can imagine, I'm sure you've had the same experience, they will try. We were running a show yesterday, and we had a let's see if I get this right. I think we had a line that was supporting Santorum or something like that, and somebody called up and said, yeah, I call him the Santorum line because I'm very much in support of him, and I hope he wins, because if he wins, President Obama will definitely get back in, and that's who I'm really for.
Right. Well, at least he was honest. Am I correct that C-SPAN is funded solely by fees from the cable systems that carry it?
Yeah, in effect, it's funded by the citizens that either buy cable or buy satellite coverage, and we're paid on the basis of how many homes they have hooked up. It's at the rate of 6 cents a month, and it comes out to about $3 million a year.
Why do the cable systems do it? Is it to pander to members of Congress in pursuit of cable-friendly policies?
I suspect you could find somebody that would say that, but those days are long gone. When we started, the driving force for C-SPAN were several cable television executives, and the lead was a man named Bob Rosenkranz, who lives up in Connecticut. That was never in his thinking. I spent many hours with him. He was the one that gave me the first check to start the place. Like anything like this, you have different motives on the part of people. But I told them from the beginning, do not expect this to make a difference to you in the regulatory scheme of things. And they weren't required to do it. There's no regulation of what we do. The content is open and free. And it's just one of those things that they wanted to do when they were looking around for new ideas.
I've met Bob Rosenkranz. He also started those wonderful Intelligence Squared debates. That's the same guy, right?
Well, he started, he was the first contributor to Blocking Heads TV, and he also was a huge contributor to Peter Osnos's public affairs publishing house there in New York City. He's a tremendous guy. Bob's going to be 85, I think, this week, and he lives up in Greenwich and was just a great human being.
Before you go, a couple of things real quick. You're retiring, but you will keep doing your interview show, Book Notes.
Yeah, I stepped away because, well, a lot of reasons, but mainly because it was time to pass it on to our two COOs who have been here for a very long time. Susan Swain's been here for 30 years, and Rob Kennedy's been here for 25. And they work tremendously as a team, and I'm 70, and I just thought this is a good time. I wanted to do it when I could walk out of here. I'm going to be around. I'll still be chairman of the board. I'm not looking for titles, but they wanted me to stay for at least another 3 years, and I love doing that show on Sunday nights, and I'm just going to keep doing it.
Do you think that C-SPAN has been to the advantage of one party or the other inadvertently?
I think it inadvertently in the beginning was to the advantage of the conservative Republicans like Newt Gingrich, because he was the first one to use it. But over the years, I think it's a tremendous advantage to the minorities. And right now you've got the Democrats who are a minority in the House, and they get equal time here. And in the Senate, you have the Republicans who are in the minority. I've always thought the minority got shortchanged here in Washington because of the showbiz aspect of a lot of television. So I like the fact the minorities have an equal voice now, and they always know they can go to the floor of the House and Senate and be heard.
And just going forward, how must the role of C-SPAN change in the new media and social media age?
Oh, we've got to be there. we were the first ones really to stream our entire network around the clock on back in the mid-90s. And we're there with Twitter and, you know, Facebook and Foursquare and all that stuff. We're in the apps. We got to be there. It gets a little tricky, though, when you've got this huge competition going on between the cable folks and everybody else. So
that's right.
We got to walk carefully.
So what happens to C-SPAN and to live showing of Congress if technology makes cable obsolete?
Well, it's a long way down the road. It's possible like anything else, but I have a lot of I have a lot of respect for the business community's ability to move pretty fast when they start to lose money. And our industry now is spread across the telephone, the internet, the web service, and also television. I don't look to it to disintegrate in front of our eyes, because frankly the capacity with HD on computers is not going to be that great for a long time. And who knows? I mean, I think it'll be here for a while, but it's like anything else. I remember the Studebaker.
Studebaker is the last word from Brian Lamb, stepping back as CEO and president of C-SPAN now. Thankfully, he'll still be doing his wonderful Book Notes program. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Brian, thanks for your interest, and good luck to you.
Thanks. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Harvard sociologist Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot wonders if we shortchange goodbyes to start anew. Stay tuned.